Welcome to the Cult Film Showdown. My name is James Cotta, and I'm very excited to bring you a special interview with legendary cult film director Jim Wynorski. If this is your first time listening, the Cult Film Showdown celebrates B-movies, exploitation film, cult film, schlock, grindhouse, drive-in, direct-to-video, and especially the VHS era. We love these films. Our podcast is about celebrating movies that have more heart than budget. We set out to search for the ultimate B-movie. And so far, we have looked at 150 films, ranking each in five categories, none of which is objective quality. You can visit WeTalkPodcast.com to find the current stats. More recently, we have been deep diving into anthology TV series, such as Masters of Horror and The Hitchhiker. When we heard that Jim Wynorski has a new movie coming out, we jumped at the chance to chat with him. Dino Gator is available for pre-order now, and will be released on January 14, 2025. Links are in the show description, and we'll have more info after the interview. And now, Jim Wynorski.
I'm speaking to Jim Wynorski. 110 directing credits on IMDb, 63 writing credits, 62 producer credits, and 52 actor. Is that more acting than you thought?
Yes. It is more. I usually just go in when I need some, you know, I don't want to go cast something, you know.
It's not an Alfred Hitchcock thing, it's a money thing?
It's a money thing, yeah.
I think I watched about 100 of your films in lockdown, Jim.
In lockdown?
Yes, I watched a
Were
few.
Were you in prison?
No, Canada. So, you know, close.
Okay. Okay, well, if you've seen 100 out of 112, then that's good. I don't think I've seen 100 out of 112.
Well, Jim, your latest film is Dino Gator, which comes out in January 14 of 25.
That's right.
What's Dino Gator about? Let's start there.
Dino Gator is a throwback to what was going on 12 years ago when the Sci-Fi Channel was at its peak. Every week there was a new creature, and I was working for them along with a lot of other friends of mine, and we were making Monster of the Week. And we made things like Piranaconda. We made things like Camel Spiders, Super Gator versus Dino Croc. And we were making these things constantly. And then the Sci-Fi Channel went to wrestling and has disappeared, kind of. So, I don't know, I just decided to make another one. And I was friends with Michael Madsen. I'd done like four movies with Michael. And I said, do you want to come down to Florida and hang out in the swamp? And we did. We went down to Mariana, Florida. And we used their caves. We used their swamp. We used their lakes. And had a kind of a fun throwback Sci-Fi Channel Monster of the Week movie. And it's a lot of fun.
And it's had a bit of an evolution as far as its post-production and such, right?
Oh, yeah. It was made a few years ago and put on the shelf for a long time. And I had to do all these effects. And I finally found somebody who was very good at doing them. He made it look real. And but he was working at a slow pace. And as he did the effects, we cut them into the film, and then we scored it. And finally, I was working on other things, and I said, you know, I got to get this film in front of the public. So I I took it off the shelf and said, yeah, it's done. And I took it to Vision Films, and they loved it. And they're putting it out.
Fantastic. And you've kept at it. So you said the sci-fi train stopped. Also, kind of around that time, the Cinemax train stopped.
Cinemax went was going strong until about 2014 or 2015. I was making films, and they were all showing up on HBO and Cinemax.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also making films strictly for the Sci-Fi Channel. And we were working hard back then. And but then the political landscape changed.
Mm-hmm.
And Cinemax didn't want any more of their late night erotic movies.
Yeah,
I mean, a bunch of them, like The Witches of Brushwick, Hills Have Thighs, a whole slew of these, you know, late night erotic movies, which were not porn, but were, you know, strictly for, you know, late night viewing, and that they stopped showing them, so I stopped making them, and. And when sci-fi went in a different direction, I think they still exist, but they're not doing Monster of the Week anymore. Then I don't think they're doing a lot of movies. So when they stopped making their Monster of the Week, you know, everybody shifted and went elsewhere. But I don't know, like 3 or 4 years ago, I decided to do another one. And that one was Dino Gator, and I think people are going to enjoy it.
I can't wait to see it. Now you you mentioned this is your fourth or fifth film with Michael Madsen. You are.
I'm not sure, but Mike's a good guy.
Yeah,
I've done like a bunch of movies. I've done a bunch of movies with him.
And I know in supporting cast is Paul Logan, who I think it's your 11th film with him.
Yeah, Paul's a good guy. I work with him all the time. He's in I got another one called Bigfoot Burgers coming up soon. He's in that. And all I can tell you is I work with Paul a lot. He's easy going and he works a lot.
I wanted to just quickly ask about a couple of other people you've collaborated with a lot.
Go ahead.
Rocky DeMarco
DeMarco is the most beautiful girl in the world. Okay. And I've had a 30-year relationship with her. And she's done about 100 of my movies. She's in a lot of my movies. And we've been friends for a very long time. And, you know, she just did Murderbot. She's going to be in the new Catwoman of the Moon. I'm doing another update of Catwoman of the Moon in January.
Oh, fantastic.
And she's also in Demolition High. She's in just point to any movie I just made in the last 10 years that she's in it.
Demolition High was one of the ones that that I first noticed her in. That's a great role.
She did a great job in that. Did a great job, and she's in Sorceress. She's in Desert Thunder. She's in everything, and because she's always good. She's always good. And she's a hottie. Okay. She's a hottie. So what can I say?
No question.
I'm drawn to her.
Christine Nguyen
is enough. She wasn't in Dino Gator because she didn't like being exposed to bugs.
she says,
"I'm not going down there. It's all human and bugs." That's what she said to me. "I'm not going down there. It's all human and bugs." So I said, "Okay." And there really wasn't a part for her in the movie. I mean, she always plays the tough girl.
Yeah.
And the girl who can get things done. And I mean, there's nobody in Hollywood like her that can step into a role and just get things done. And so that's why I keep using her, because, you know, I like women who are very sporty. So anyway. Okay, Christine Nguyen, I worked with her a number of times. She's in Shark and Salt Women's Prison Massacre.
Love that.
She's in Attack of the 50-Foot Cam Girl. She's in a bagload of our movies. She's so sweet.
That's fantastic. It was interesting watching so many of your films over that time, because there are these changes in the business side that you see. And it is interesting to compare your path with your other frequent collaborator, Fred Olen Ray.
Yes. Well, the movie business changes every 5 or 6 years. Sometimes even faster than that. And when it changes, you've got to be ready for it. Because if you've made something that no one's going to want anymore, you're going to be stuck with a movie that's costing you money.
Right.
So, I always try to put stuff in my movies that I know are going to, no one's going to sell. And you know, people love monster movies, and they love beautiful girls, and I always put them in the movies. And they like action, and they like a certain brand of humor that I have that people have noticed that I put into a lot of my movies.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
That's why I think I've been successful.
Yes, I think what I really like watching your films is the sense of humor, absolutely, no matter where the subject matter is. But just also, no matter what the resources, you have a coherent story of some sort, which you don't often find.
Well, yeah, I don't like to make films that are just, you know, meandering nothing. I want people to, you know, enjoy it. You know, working for Roger Corman when I first started, I learned that story and script were very important.
Mm-hmm.
And a good script means a good film, or can mean a good film if you got a good director. So I took a lesson from Roger Corman and just said, you know, hey, I'm going to make all my films this way, and put in a good story and put in good characters. And, you know, he was very, very like a major mentor in my early career.
Yeah, and for so many. But yes, his impact on your work just all the way through is so obvious.
Well, he was a good man, and he taught me a lot about how to make a movie. He gave me film school Well, the real film school. Okay, you can go to film school like I did and learn nothing, which is what I learned. Nothing. I learned absolutely zip from going to a college and going to film school. But when I did my first film for Roger, he said, grab a legal pad. And he said, come on, I'm going to take you to lunch. He took me to lunch. He said, now here's what I need you to do. And he gave me Film School 101, Roger Corman Film School 101. And he said, write everything down. Okay? And I still have that legal pad.
Wow.
Because it was full of solid information and tips on how to make a movie. And stuff that they don't teach you in film school. You know, he said, now he did a quiz, he did a this, he did that, he did everything. We had, you know, the lunch was, you know, 20 minutes, but the lesson was 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours. But I got a lot, I learned a lot. And he was very, very particular. You know, when I would cut a trailer or cut a movie, he would say, cut 10 frames off the end of that scene. Or, add a few frames to the end of that shot. And it would always work. Wow. It always worked better.
There you go. Instincts like that are just... at certain levels, you know exactly what it is, even if you can't explain why it is.
Yeah, well, he was very adamant, but when he saw the first film I did, which was Chopping Mall, he loved it. That was a pretty funny film because we were locked inside a mall at night for 4 weeks, and we had to wait till the mall closed to shoot the movie. And then when it opened in the morning, we had to take all our camera gear and take it out. And we kind of like owned them all for four weeks. And it was a lot of fun. And all I can tell you is we were exploding heads and setting people on fire, and it was I was learning a lot, and hopeful, and made a film that was very successful at the time. It started off as a bomb because we originally called it Robot. Okay.
Yeah.
And which was Vestron's title. Mm. They wanted to call it Robot. And we put it out in a test market called Robot, and it died. No one came to see it. And then we tried Killbots. And that didn't work either. So Roger pulls the film out of circulation, and he says, "Let's take a look at this film." And it's a good film. You know, we've got to get something out of this. So we're watching it in the screening room with the staff, and there's a janitor changing lights in the dark. while the film's playing. And finally the lights come up and we're all talking about the title. And the janitor turns around and just says, "Why don't you just call it Chopping Mall?" and Roger Corman looks at me and he says, "We're half off. It is just the beginning." And I said, where shopping costs you an arm and a leg, okay? And he said, go make a new poster and change the title. So we did, and it was a huge success. Huge success. And it proved to be that impressions is really kind of what sells the movie. If you don't know what a movie is, the title has a very strong influence on whether people buy a ticket or not.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Remains of the Day, you're not going to get kids coming to see that. So,
if you just call it Remains, you got a better shot.
Yeah, you do. So anyway, that's the story from Jobbing Ball.
That movie holds up well. We were lucky enough to see a print of it a few years back, introduced by Joe Bob Briggs at a horror convention.
Oh, that's nice. He's a good guy. I've interacted with John. His name is John Bloom.
Mm-hmm.
And I've interacted with him a number of times since the 80s.
Dino Gator sat on the shelf for a few years, as you said, putting polish on it, making it into a proper movie. Do you have anything else that's sitting on your to-do list like that?
Well, most of my movies have been released. I tell you, there's only one that I hate that is locked in a vault. Okay. Oh, I made this movie. It's called Legacy. That was the title we shot it under, but it's so awful that I said, let's put this. You know, it wasn't even. It was about half done, and I said, I'm stopping. This is awful. And it's in the vault, and it's going to stay in the vault. Somebody edited it and shot new scenes to complete it, but it still sits unreleased in the vault where it belongs. Because I worked with films like Big Bad Mama 2 with Angie Dickinson, Return of Swamp Thing with Heather Locklear, all kinds of movies. I worked with a lot of Hollywood of next people, and I've enjoyed my career.
There is a film on your IMDb list that I wasn't never able to track down, and I suspect it was turned into something else, and that's Monster Cruise.
Monster Cruise, you can see it right now on. It's a good story. I made a film called Monster Cruise for this guy. And he wanted to turn it into a kind of a Porky's, okay? And it was shot under, it was shot in Indiana. And he wanted to make it like Porky's. And I said, no one's going to want to see a movie about a monster and have, girls getting naked, you know what I mean? And I didn't care for it. It had kids in it, and it had adults in it, and teenagers, and they were all kind of like messing around. And finally, the movie just got shit canned. And the guy who owned it came to me and he said, can you save this movie? And I said, yes, 5 days of new filming will save it. Because I knew how to do it. And he came out to LA and we shot 5 extra days here in Los Angeles, with a bunch of more kids and turned it into a movie called Nessie and Me, which is playing on Tubi.
Tubi has been such a great, great platform for...
It's a museum. You can find anything you want there. I love Tubi. Tubi's fantastic. So, anyway, that's what happened to Monster Cruise. It became Nessie and Me. And Nessie and Me went through the roof. Redbox bought it before they went out of business. And they put it in all, they put 20,000 units in their machines.
Wow.
But that, you know, it's Redbox's ancient history too. Everything changes. Everything changes.
Well, Jim, I'm very, very grateful for your time.
Okay, thank you.
And
James, it was pleasure talking to you, and I hope that the audience comes to check out Dino Gator when it comes out on the 14th. Okay?
Fantastic, and hopefully we talk to you down the road again, Jim.
Sounds terrific. Take care now. Bye.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks again to Jim Wynorski for his time and to Vision Films for making this interview possible. Dino Gator is available for pre-order now. It will be released on January 14, 2025. You can purchase Dino Gator in the US, Canada, and the UK on iTunes, Apple TV, and Vimeo. In the US, Dino Gator is also available on Vudu and Fandango at home. You can find the Cult Film Showdown on YouTube and your favorite podcast app. We're on Instagram and Patreon as the Cult Film Showdown. We are sponsored by WeTalkPodcast.com, the home of The Octagon, the record of our search for the ultimate B-movie. And WeTalk Podcast can be found on Facebook and on X. Please like, subscribe, comment, and share. And if this is your first time, welcome. We hope to see you again.
All right, you set up? You good? Can you hear me okay?
I'm laying down on the couch, just ready to answer any questions.
Fantastic.